Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Delta Talks, a TMT podcast by Delta Partners. I'm Samrita, and I lead the PR function here. In today's episode, we have Vicky Slate, who is the VP of Diversity and Inclusion of the TM Forum, with Linda Wilson, who is a principal here at Delta Partners. Vicky and Linda will be speaking on diversity, inclusion, and belonging, and sort of building up on a report that was done by the TM Forum. Over to you, Linda.
Thanks, Samrita. So, as mentioned, we've just launched the GLF Diversity and Inclusion Report, which I was part of putting together. And part of this, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to Vicky. She provided a lot of insights, and so we thought we would try and distribute those across through this podcast. So, Vicky, if we can just dive right in. So, based on what we found in the survey. So we found something, well, this year's survey, there was a really interesting outcome that we found that there was a difference in the previous participants and those that were quite new to the survey. So what we found was that for all repeat respondents, there was a big embrace of DIB. And they really see this as part of their core values. It's a strength and a differentiator. They see it as really critical for the future sustainability of both the organizations and the industry. Whereas when we looked at the newer respondents, only 60% of these respondents saw this as a strategic imperative and often considered diversity and inclusion and belonging as really business as usual, and feel that they are naturally diverse. And what I was wondering, with the work that you're doing with the TM Forum, have you seen an evolution or transformation in the views of the industry regarding diversity, inclusion, and belonging?
Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting to read the report because a lot of organizations now are seeing this as a business critical strategic imperative if this industry is to remain relevant and sustainable over the coming years. The biggest areas where things have changed is in our understanding of bias and discrimination and the way people are thinking about diversity, equality, inclusion, and belonging, and the very reasons organizations are doing this kind of work in the first place. A decade ago, most organizations were approaching it from a very compliance-driven approach that focused on ensuring the company was meeting all requirements it was legally obligated to, and it was about attaining a minimum as opposed to adding value. Obviously, we've had COVID, it's become a lot more of a strategic imperative, and as social consciousness around DE&I has increased, many organizations have recognized that the consumer markets look very different than they might have even 10 years ago, and that consumers and prospective employees want to respect the values of the organizations that they buy from and also that they work with. So the employees putting a lot more emphasis on this. And it's clear that a focus on inclusive and equitable employment policies now as well is a much higher priority for the employees as well as the majority of tech companies today, or ICT companies, thanks to the growing awareness worldwide about the devastating negative effects of systemic racism, bias, and inequality. And of course, companies are now often required to comply with regulatory ESG obligations. And that's given a renewed focus and attention to this vital strategic imperative. And they're seeking insights, expert insights and knowledge now about how to translate all of these obligations into real world sustainable solutions.
Excellent. And then you've highlighted the views that we saw in the survey from the repeat respondents. Yeah. What do you see the risks of the biggest risks that the respondents that do not have a deliberate strategy to embrace DIB? What is the biggest risk to them?
Well, the risk is to the entire industry, but let's be honest, we're losing the war on talent already. and will continue to do so. The reality is, if we don't start paying attention to this, then we won't be able to attract the talent that we need to drive the innovation that's required in order to build resilience, which we need now, not just because it's a post-COVID world, but going forward. We are already losing out to other industries because they're now asking, everybody wants the same skills. And many initiatives are focusing on visible diversity. Here at TM Forum, and with the work that we're doing collaboratively and globally with the D&I Council, we believe that inclusion is more important in order to attract and retain diverse talent. Without inclusion, you won't keep the diversity that you've got. For example, there's only 6 women CEOs leading 31 companies within top global telco space, and only 60 of the 330 top management positions are held by women. And of course, it goes well beyond gender. What we need to do is get these diverse employees in leadership positions where they own the technology direction and own a very strategic part of the business.
Yeah, so you picked up on you mentioned a very important point around inclusion being very important to providing sustainable diversity. Could you, these concepts, diversity and inclusion, are often considered one and the same. Yeah. But as you mentioned, inclusion is very much a standalone concept. Could you just explain the difference between those and kind of the importance of inclusion as a standalone topic?
Yeah, sure. Well, if you look at diversity is the what, right? And inclusion is the how. So diversity is where we focus on the makeup of the workforce, demographics such as gender, race, ethnicity, age, accessibility, disability, sexual orientation, veteran status, that's just to name a few. And inclusion is a measure of how, of culture that enables, it's a measure of the culture that actually enables diversity to thrive. When we talk about inclusion, feeling included is a key aspect of our human lives. And I'm sure that many of us, no matter what our background, whether diverse or non-diverse, many of us can recall a sense of exclusion, moments when we felt left out, different, that we weren't welcome or weren't appreciated. Inclusion is completely the reverse, making people feel welcome, ensuring it's safe for them to express who they choose to be, demonstrating our appreciation for their input, working collaboratively and showing that we care. And all evidence proves that organizations that are focused on building a more inclusive culture, and that is a real point that I want to emphasize, the inclusive culture, they'll attract and retain a wider diversity of talent. Because the inclusive culture then empowers diverse talent to think differently, share their experiences and perspective, which in turn is a key driver for that innovation that we need, the development and the engagement. And inclusive cultures enable our colleagues to do things differently, working in ways that suit them. If we think about neurodiversity, they just think really differently. And it's learning how to understand that, flexing work patterns for those that need it to ensure their life-work balance is healthy, that they're able to deliver the best for their organization. And this focus on inclusion will equip our colleagues to make a difference to their well-being, which in turn leads to the success of our organizations. The world has changed. It is continuing to change. And inclusion is an imperative, and I can't emphasize that enough, to future-proof our businesses.
So when we looked at, so staying on the topic of inclusion, I think we will do that for the remainder of the podcast. So that was a key component of this year's report. What we found that was that 70% of the GLF members say that the level of prioritization given to inclusion has increased in the last 12 months, but only 35% believe that they are highly inclusive. So before we go into the why they are not highly, why only such a few believe they are highly inclusive, what do you believe has driven this increased focus over the last 12 months?
Well, if we look at what's been done in the past to retain talent, a lot of organisations offer the typical things, free coffee, tea in the break room, always welcomed, competitive benefits, generous raises and bonuses, employee recognition programmes. But none of that works for an employee who does not feel comfortable in their work environment. So picture, for example, someone who's Muslim who prays in their car because they don't want to advertise their religion, a mother who doesn't, or a father who doesn't put pictures up of their children so that co-workers won't question commitment to the job, or an LGBTQ plus executive who's unsure whether they can bring their partner to company functions. Employees who differ from most of their colleagues in religion, gender, sexual orientation, socioeconomic background, and generation often hide important parts of themselves at work for the fear of those negative consequences. And this is called identity cover. And it makes people vulnerable to leaving their organizations. And most business leaders do understand the diversity part of diversity and inclusion. And actually, a lot of executives, they understand what needs to be done, but a lot of the time the execution is left with the CHRO, whereas it needs to be, as I said, it needs to be coming from the top down, and those values need to be lived and breathed. We all get that having a diverse workforce is important to customers. It's critical to succeeding in a global market. And it's the inclusion part that eludes them, creating an environment where people can be who they are, somewhere that values our colleagues' unique talents and perspectives, and makes them want to stay. The key to inclusion is really understanding who your employees really are. We're creating one of the ways to be able to do that, which I know we'll come on to later. The inclusion and diversity score, which really gets to the heart of the human approach and the human thinking. If you look at now as well, in employee engagement surveys, diversity questions are being added in, but we need to make sure that they're inclusion questions as well.
Yeah, and you raise a good point. And I think let's move, as you said, the TM Forum has identified this as an area to focus on. And it was, by the way, in the report noted as one of the key challenges by the respondents, and the fact that they understand that inclusion is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. However, they struggle to have a standardized, meaningful way of measuring it. Yes. And as I said, I think TM Forum is in its beta phase already in building what is known as IDS, the inclusion and diversity score. Could you provide some background on this? What is the overall objective? What are you planning? What are you measuring as part of this? For everyone to get a better understanding?
Yeah, well, this is something that TM Forum's been working on for the last 15 months or so with our Diversity and Inclusion Council. Kerry Gilder, who's the CEO of Colt, is our chair. And we've worked very closely with Bain & Co. On this, given their expertise in this area, particularly with NPS, the Net Promoter Score. So we believe now, after a successful alpha trial, that we have a robust inclusion and diversity score. It's equally weighed between an inclusion measure, which we talk to the employees for that, and a diversity measure. And both of these are key to fostering a healthy and competitive company culture. The inclusion measure helps companies understand the feeling of inclusiveness within a company by all employees. And this is captured through an employee survey. It's 5 questions in the beta trial at the moment, and it allows participating companies to identify groups that feel more versus less included. And also, we're creating action plans to drive the change where needed. The diversity metric focuses on the top levels of management and low, and represents the diversity of this group's in terms of gender, ethnic diversity, LGBTQ+, accessibility. Having a diverse management team is critically important for decision making, policy setting, and having a set of leaders all employees can look up to. And this score is something that we, all CEOs would look at EBITDA, revenue. They now need to also start incorporating this, and we are going to make this an industry standard. Creating this metric, we needed to balance a number of factors. And based on the alpha trial, and as I said, we're in beta trial now, we think we've landed at a good spot. It's simple, easily understood, easily captured via surveys, and easily adopted. It's forward-looking, so we've designed the score to provide guidance on how to progress the industry and not penalize the current state. Having inclusion as a core component of the inclusion and diversity score, some of the current pain points can give guidance to the very concrete interventions which we will be providing that will make a difference in the future. And of course, it's adaptable. We do know that there are regional differences in diversity, and we benchmark the diversity of companies relative to the diversity of that country. And in addition, we're continuously seeking for ways to include additional measures of diversity as the benchmarks over time. We are planning to launch the industry benchmark at DTWS in Copenhagen in September, which is the TM Forum event. So we're planning to launch this to the industry. Overall, so far, the results have been quite positive, and it's confirmed a number of our ongoing hypotheses. We are so excited that, with some of the companies that have taken part, so we're really looking forward to launching this.
And through this process, as well as your general experience at working in diversity, inclusion, and belonging, have you picked up kind of some key common challenges that you find that firms are facing when it comes to implementing and executing on inclusion?
Measurement, not being able to measure it. Although, of course, when we launch the Inclusion and Diversity Score, or the IDS, we can help work on that, because, there are a lot of lists out there at the moment, the top 100 lists, and they all serve a purpose, and they're great lists that we need to have. But the inclusion part, being able to measure the inclusion part, has been the challenge. And that's why, together with the Diversity and Inclusion Council and the members of that, we've been very focused on making real change happen. And to make real change happen, we need to understand where we are, so hence the measurement. And that is, for me, the key challenge which we are aiming to overcome.
And once you have the measurement, I understand that there are initiatives that you will recommend to drive up the scores that the different organizations are getting across the different elements. Have you seen, or what are some of these interesting or successful initiatives that you've seen undertaken in the industry to drive the inclusivity of these firms?
Well, if we look at, I can give you an example that came out of our trial. And one of the reasons why colleagues didn't feel included was because they felt like they couldn't progress if they didn't speak the native language of the headquarter office. And this was something that wasn't known by the CEO and the SLT team. So what it allowed them to do, and this kind of is a best practice, and this is what we are gathering, so that when you get your pain points back from your employees, we also will give you back five or six interventions or a toolkit so that you can address. So we address them and do something about it. So when you come to do the score, 18 months down the line, 12 months to 18 months, then not only will you know where you benchmark, but you'll be able to see how you've progressed. So they implemented a number of things to combat that, which, you know, so that things are translated. They looked at what was their second biggest language, and everything goes out in both languages. They've implemented a new software that, you know, allows immediate translation, and not just for translation, but also works very well for those people and colleagues who are dyslexic. So I think that's a real interesting and successful initiative. But the other point I want to make is that, you know, we have to look at the cultures of an organization, which is something that we're focused on as well. The culture of an organization is fundamentally shaped by leadership, mindset, behaviors, and values, with the aim that, you know, combining to create value with organization for its people. And factors contributing to cultural change include attributes spread amongst four key forces: economic, environmental, social, and technological. And this needs to be addressed, because embracing this culture helps organizations contribute to greater collective and sustainable value creation through an empowered, adaptable, tech-enabled workforce, which is capable of performing and collaborating effectively from anywhere to build innovative products and services, which are enabled by technology, informed by data. And, you know, so there's a real business value for that. So we're pulling together, you know, all the best practices for those interventions for the IDS, but also working on a cultural maturity model and a guidebook for culture and digital skills as well.
It's a lot. It seems to be a lot going on, and a lot. So there's always, when I, and through the process of the report, I just, you just begin to realize how inclusion in particular is evolving. Yeah. And one can't stop working on it and being aware of it. And a lot of it is driven by awareness, as your example provided above, regarding the, you know, not the language barrier, which, it's never intentional. Mm. But without the awareness of these different components and how your employee is feeling, one will never know.
Yeah.
And so, Vicky, if you could give maybe a closing comment on the, you know, the importance of this topic being discussed broadly within the industry and being addressed within the industry, maybe just as a summary to the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, as a summary, I would say that, you know, measurement is key to understanding where we are. So I would encourage everybody, when we launch this industry benchmark, to get involved, because the idea is that we don't just benchmark this industry, but where we're losing talent to is other industries. So eventually, you know, this will be available completely cross-industry. And I think, as an important point to note as well, there, you know, a key barrier which we all face, regardless of industry, there's been a lot of talk about the Great Resignation, which is what we're calling the mass exodus of workers from their jobs. It's real. It is very real. And the top five predictors of employees quitting, and this has come from a report from the MIT, so it's done by scientists, is toxic work culture, job insecurity, as the top two. And within toxic work culture, it's a feeling of lack of inclusion, is that a business is an environment that harms employees' physical or psychological well-being. And non-inclusivity is a top number one of the indicators of a toxic work culture. So it really is important that we address this. And most organizations are looking at this, but we're there, you know, as a source for the industry, working collaboratively to help overcome that through not just measuring, but by providing those best practices. So I would I would stress that every organization needs to be involved in that. And obviously, you know, we've been working together with the GLF as well on this report. So I would encourage anyone to get in touch to look at how they can get involved in this.
Great. I believe that you've painted the picture of the importance very clearly. And thank you again for taking the time to discuss your perspectives on in particular the topic of inclusion. It's always very insightful and frankly inspiring listening to you and the passion that you've got behind this topic. So thank you very much, and I hope this inspires others to investigate the importance of inclusion and diversity and belonging a lot further. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thanks to everyone at Delta Partners as well. Thank you.